Hey, everybody, and welcome to Political Playlist Happy Hour. I'm Michael Kristoff.
I'm Anna Muskie-Goldwyn.
And today we got another interview special. We are talking with a really interesting dude named William He. He has founded an organization called Dream for America. Anna, what is the scoop here? And is this guy old enough to be on a happy hour?
I don't even know. Let's just say he could not have a drink with us. William is a very impressive young man. He's 16 years old. And this year, he founded this organization, Dream for America, like you mentioned, which is a grassroots progressive network of students and young people across America working to basically operate as a counterpoint to the group Turning Point, which we will get into all with him, so I won't spoil it. But his background is really interesting. He got interested in politics sort of really specifically after the Parkland shootings when he was only 11 years old, which we also talk about. I don't know what you're doing in your 11. I certainly was not thinking about politics.
Well, I wasn't thinking about politics, but I was making movies at 11, I will say.
Okay. Jesus. Yeah. All right, Steven.
Sorry. Sorry, we're all overachievers, Anna.
But William is, he's the son of immigrants. And he, like I said, got involved in politics by phone banking with March for Their Lives. And then he ended up organizing for Senator Ed Markey's campaign. And then later for the Biden presidential campaign, his group Dream for America, what their goals are. And we ask him a bunch of questions just about, hey, what is it like to be 16 years old in America right now and as politically active as he is? But also, where does he sort of see the vision for this organization going?
Well, let's hear what he has to say.
The political revolution of the millennial.
Welcome to Political Playlist.
All right. Are you ready, guys?
Happy hour.
Happy hour. You fucked that up so bad. God.
Well, William, welcome to the happy hour. How's it going?
Great. Thanks for having me.
We're super excited to talk to you. You know, we just kind of gave a little bit of a background. And before we dive into questions, I just wanted to, you know, acknowledge the fact that it's amazing to see so many young people starting organizations like this one. And so off the bat, just saying thank you for what you're doing. And we can't wait to kind of learn more about it. But I think it deserves off the top acknowledgement that someone as young as yourself and your colleagues that you're working with are taking matters into their own hands, which is what we love to see here at Political Playlist, is young people doing cool stuff. So first thing, thank you.
Thank you.
So, William, I think a good place to start here is what is one of the defining and really galvanizing issues that we see among young people and particularly Gen Z. And that's the issue of the epidemic mass shootings in schools that we're seeing and outside of schools as well. And so we're seeing how this has become such a, you know, fundamental and motivating issue for people like Maxwell Frost to run for Congress and so many others to get involved like yourself. And so can you talk to us about, you know, how you became to be so passionate about this issue and how this led you into the work that you do?
Yeah. You know, I first got involved in politics after the Parkland school shootings. I mean, I just did phone banks for March for Our Lives. I mean, you know, after all, what else could an 11-year-old do back then? But, you know, fire drills have now replaced active shooter drills or have now been replaced by active shooter drills. And my generation is now the generation of school shootings, the generation of not one, but two economic crises. And, you know, how sad is that we live in a country where at 16, 17, 18, often younger, a lot of folks are trying to realize that getting involved in politics, in advocacy, in organizing is no longer a choice, but a necessity. And I think that ever since the 2016 presidential election, there has been a sort of a new chapter of the story of my generation for really every single year, whether it was the Women's March, you know, gun reform, right, climate change, civil rights. And, you know, I think in the years to come, that'll grow even more. And there's also a lot of a huge aura of, you know, personal impact. The survivors of the Parkland school shooting were students themselves. Their experiences are probably not that different from me if I had to, you know, go through something like that. And, mm-hmm. you know, the experiences of my generation are really just quite deeply personal. And for that kind of tragedy to hit that close to home, it really was an inflection point, not just for me, but a lot of people I know, and I'm sure for millions of other young people too. I mean, really, you know, what we're worrying about is being shot at our school when, you know, when we're teenagers and often younger. And the existence of social media really just helps to bring everything to a new stratosphere. And, you know, the whole reason why we call it Dream for America, you know, we want to go back to an era of normalcy, an era where children and teenagers can actually have the capacity to dream, to be educated, to have a childhood, to, you know, the whole concept of the American dream, right? Politicians, power brokers, they understand that, you know, Gen Z are going to be a consequential agent of change in the years to come.
I just kind of want to touch on something you said at the very beginning of your answer about being 11 years old and phone banking.
Yeah.
Like that to me is, we're not that much old. I mean, we are kind of older than you, but like I still view myself as a child. And, but like, I think about being 11, A, in a very different time than we're in now. And I'm just curious, like, as an 11-year-old, what was going through your head that you were so aware that there was even something that you could do at 11? Like, I understand, or I at least can empathize with the sentiment of being afraid or recognizing that this is a bad thing, the fact that all these shootings are happening. But to have the capacity to be like, okay, I'm going to seek out a way to help is just so impressive, but at the same time, like quite disturbing that you had to do that. So I'm just wondering if you can kind of elaborate a little bit personally on how that felt and what you think your 11-year-old self was sort of grappling with and going through at that time to motivate yourself to take such, frankly, an extraordinary step for such a young person.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, I don't think there was some sort of, you know, large, deliberate sort of internal monologue that was happening. You know, what do I do? How do I do this? It was really just, this happened. This is terrible. What can I do that can make some sort of impact? And, you know, like I said, you know, what can an 11-year-old do? I mean, you can't run for president. You can't, you know, do some gargantuan thing. You know, I'm not a wealthy person, so I can't, you know, devote millions of dollars into legislation or lobbying or whatever it might be, right? So easiest thing to do is to pick up a phone, tell people to, you know, to know about this, to go to rallies, to go support things, right? That's the easiest thing I can do. And, you know, I've always had an interest in sort of history and politics from a young age. I mean, if we're going even back into more ancient history, so 2016, 2015 now, I mean, I first got, you know, interested in politics around the time of the sort of Iowa caucuses in 2016, but no other thing other than just CNN made it really appealing to watch. There's just no reason for that. But, you know, but that in a combination of really just, you know, this is a really terrible thing. I mean,
yeah,
you know, my brother was in high school at the time back then. And, you know, for people who are, you know, within reaching distance in age and experience and, you know, youth, for them to be sitting in a classroom and one day have somebody stroll and hold up their guns and start firing, you know, relentlessly at and indiscriminately against people is really terrifying. That, like, how can that happen? And, you know, other countries, this is not a common experience. This is a uniquely American experience, right? If you have British people or people from Europe or wherever else, they come over here like, well, I didn't know that was a thing. You know, people flinch at even the sound of fireworks and, you know, they think it might be a gun. Whereas, you know, regular people think, oh, okay, it's fireworks. Let's celebrate. But, you know, to answer your question, I'm a debate kid. I give really long-winded answers. So
you've come to the right place.
Two very long-winded people ourselves. No worries.
Yes.
Okay. Well, you know, three is a club. So, but to basically answer your question, you know, there really just was a spark. And I think a lot of people feel the same way too. But, you know, afterwards, I think there was a feeling inside that, you know, what else can I do, right? You know, this sort of feeling of public service and, you know, serving the common good. I believe one of the largest things that I remember doing was Ed Markey. I don't know if you remember, he had a primary campaign with Joe Kennedy
in
2020. I remember that was sort of one of the first campaigns that I got really excited about. I mean, there was a lot of, I think part of it was just Ed had a lot of memes going in his campaign. Yeah. Really, really funny. But I think that's where I started really getting into politics. And then after that, you know, height of 2020 with the pandemic and, you know, COVID and everything, I started a sort of a food security nonprofit. It's called Bread for America. It's not very active now, but sort of in 2021 that we, you know, me and a friend of mine recognized that there was an issue within our community, right? After 2021, food security was a huge issue. A lot of people had their SNAP benefits cut. A lot of people had to rely on welfare benefits. A lot of people, of course, lost their jobs and their incomes, and you had, you know, millions of people who were food insecure or were, you know, had their kids going to bed hungry every night. So we started an organization to really just try to deliver food to people within our community. And I think we ended up doing 10,000 pounds of food to something like 200, 300 families in just a couple of months.
Wow. Dream for America's objective you have is to build this grassroots network of young progressives, of people like you just mentioned, who might not otherwise feel like they have a place to advocate for themselves, for their beliefs, et cetera. One of the big pieces of that is doing that through college campuses all over the country. And so I think this is, you know, probably not a surprising approach, but I think it's a very important approach and an approach that can be a difficult one to navigate, I imagine. And so I'm wondering, can you just talk a little bit about Dream for America's strategy as it relates to students and like what campuses you started with and why you targeted those? And then also talk about what some of the difficulties have been in navigating that part of your strategy.
Yeah. Okay. So let's see, how should we break this down? That's like five questions packed into one.
Let's see. First question.
We're good at that
too. Can you describe? Yeah. Long-winded. We're all experts on.
I got this. Nice. You know.
First, let's just talk about the strategy itself.
Yeah. Okay. Great. So, well, I mean, to understand sort of our organizing strategy, you got to understand sort of, you know, what we're playing against and what the arena looks like. So I want to, you know, firstly, do both of you know what Turning Point USA is?
Sure.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. And for maybe people who aren't listening who don't, can you give a very quick description?
Yeah, 1%. So for people who don't know, let me just boil it down for you. Basically, what Turning Point USA is, it is a far right, you know, youth group founded, I think, coming up on their 10-year anniversary now. By then, you know, I think he was 17, 18-year-old Charlie Kirk. And they're funded by all these really ultra-conservative billionaires. And their ultimate goal is to really sort of push the conversation on high school, colleges, university campuses, way right. And they're trying to really mobilize a new generation of young conservatives in every medium, not just online, but on campuses too. And they've, I think up until 2023, up until this point, they've raised over $100 million from them and their affiliated groups. They've got 4,000 chapters all across the country. You know, it's not just university. They actually have more chapters in high school than in colleges.
Wow.
Which I think there was a study that came out recently that said that 12th grade boys are now more conservative than they have ever been before in the last 50 years, right? Wow. Which is, you know, where is that movement coming from? You didn't really see a jump until, you know, the last 4 or 5 years, which, you know, not necessarily saying there's a cause, but there's definitely a correlation between their work and what's happening. And what they're basically doing is bringing the MAGA movement to school, you know, backed by hundreds of millions of dollars and, you know, all these billionaire special interests. They have a unique capacity and a unique position to, you know, really make a significant investment in young people. And, you know, conservatives and Republicans are generally, you know, less popular with young people. So obviously there's a far bigger urgency for them to do so. But the reason why it's important for people who are pro-democracy or more progressive leaning to understand why this is an important thing to be involved in, an important thing to understand, is because there is ground that's being lost. Turning Point has, of course, spent millions of dollars into, you know, student organizing. They have spent millions more into wading into student government elections to elect ultra-conservative campus leaders on these campuses. But they also do a lot of targeted outreach to Hispanics, to Asian Americans, to African Americans. They host these conferences, you know, quarterly, monthly, with the culmination of their efforts around America Fest, which has drawn record crowds of, you know, people who are not that much older than you or I. You know, I think they drew over 10,000 people from their last conference. And, you know, they have all these speakers, these colorful characters, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Donald Trump, and the casting list continues. But just like Turning Point, our work is not electoral. It is not about getting out young people to vote. It is not about, you know, turning out people, you know, 5 days before an election, right? It is about something more fundamental, something more cultural. It is about education. It is about culture. It is about philosophy. What Turning Point has done is they market themselves as nonpartisan. They go on the offense and progressive.
No way, really?
Yeah, they do. And it's really funny. It's really funny.
Wow.
I didn't know that. That's, yeah.
They have these rally signs that they pass out on campuses. They have a Democrat, Republican, and then a check mark, awake. And
it's amazing.
They market themselves as nonpartisan, right? Just like, you know, a place for people to get involved and to, you know, have a place to, you know, speak their mind, right?
Right. And it's really kind of a Trojan horse effect, masking what they're really all about, which obviously you guys seem to be very, you know, very forthcoming in your progressive positions and whatnot. And I'm curious if you can kind of talk a little bit about this strategy that you guys seem to have. On your website, you were calling it chapters, creators, and conferences. And it seems like this was born out of what you're describing as a very effective media content strategy on the part of Turning Point. So how do you guys use your strategy to begin to, you know, compete and create an alternative viewpoint to right. what they're pushing?
Yeah. And so, you know, Turning Point, as you said, has been very successful, right? And a lot of the yep. target outreaches, they go into these progressive areas, both in, you know, online content, but also in organizing, to do a lot of, you know, demographic targeted organizing. And I think New York City swung 37 points rightward from 2018 to 2019, which is one of the bluest places in America. Very interesting stuff. And you have Hispanics and Asian Americans trending really rightward, especially among young minority men, which is that whole sort of study about, you know, 12th grade boys, right? And so our strategy is about offering an alternative. I mean, we're not simply an organization that is in opposition to groups like Turning Point, right? But about trying to offer a progressive voice, right? And we're not right. explicitly progressive in the sense that, you know, left-wing progressivism, right? We want to extend that franchise. Progressive should be a term that everyone can use. And so how our strategy
plays I think it would probably be fair to say that, you know, ideologically, you would be very much opposite of Turning Point in many regards.
Sure. Yeah. And, you know, yeah. we've taken a very pro-democracy, you know,
yeah.
you know, and with the values that come behind that, it is a very progressively aligned organization. Yeah. And so how our sort of, you know, strategy comes in, right? We have sort of what we call the three C's: chapters, creators, and conferences. Our chapters are going to be a big part of what we do. And I mean, you mentioned college campuses earlier. Something else that we want to focus on, not just college campuses, is really trying to get involved in the places where sort of traditional progressives have really left behind the wayside, right? So that's high schools, that is, you know, places of faith, that is rural institutions, right? I spoke to a volunteer with us, you know, a couple weeks ago. He was talking about he went to college in rural Utah, and Turning presence there was just absolutely massive. It was everywhere. They had wow. Ben Shapiro come and speak. Charlie Kirk was there. And there were a lot of people who were, I mean, not just progressive, but a lot of people who might be more independent or moderate leaning who kind of felt left out or, you know, very distasteful with everything that Turning Point is. But they had nowhere to go with that, right? There are organizations like High School Democrats and, you know, College Democrats that do exist. And they are great organizations and there are great people who run them. But oftentimes, sort of the sort of outside perspective that goes into it is, these organizations are like exclusively partisan aligned. They have the word Democrat in its name. And, you know, yeah, I think young people have the, you know, tendency, you know, it's not cool to right. be a part of that. And oftentimes, you know, they're significantly underfunded, as well as, you know, there is not a sort of a consistent sort of organizing effort that's happening there. And sort of our approach is really just trying to make politics cool for people to be a part of on their campus. And so whether that is, you know, really great, innovative, you know, youth-tailored marketing. But on top of that, we want to play offense with a really big sense of urgency to go to the places where progressives are really, you know, not in the ideological majority. And, you know, we might not always be welcome when we go there, but we win when we go to the places where we aren't welcome and we go there anyways, because, mm-hmm. you know, just having those conversations and making that outreach and taking that first step and going into places, you know, beyond these deep blue college campuses, into trade schools, places of faith, working class communities. Our work is not about turning out young voters. It is about building a new generation of democracy defenders, you know, mobilizing a new generation of young leaders who can one day be future campaign staffers, legislative aides. Maybe a future president is in there somewhere. You never know.
I have a question kind of about the messaging specifically. You know, something that you've talked about on your website and you're kind of alluding to now is this idea of going into what you say on your website, or when you're the philosophical minority, which you've been talking about. And I'm wondering if you can get a little bit specific of, like, let's just say you're going to a college campus in a rural place where there may be a lot of conservative students, right-leaning students, also a lot of probably students who have not really made up their political mind, maybe don't really care. What what do your ambassadors that you send there, or the people, you know, the sort of chapters that you're trying to create, what are the messages, like, what is the main message that you send first to the person who doesn't seem to care about politics or doesn't seem to really have an interest yet, and to the person who has maybe made up their mind that they maybe are not progressive, they are more conservative, but I think that there's obviously a need to have that conversation and be able, I think, especially amongst the younger generation, of learning how to create that conversation of like, okay, we may be on opposite sides about this thing, but is that part of Dream for America's platform that you want to kind of educate young people on how to have conversations with those that they disagree with?
Yes. So in terms of a platform, right, you know, our platform is literally a laundry list of issues and our explanations for why we support them. But part of that platform also includes a lot about, you know, civic engagement and democracy. And one of the things that we advocate for is a really novel idea, but something called the American High School Exchange Program. And the reasoning behind that is, you know, as you mentioned, you know, Gen Z and Americans in general, too, are becoming increasingly socially isolated. We just don't know how to talk to each other. The urban-rural divide is now greater than ever before. And this partisan tribalism is causing everybody to lose our collective sense of empathy for our country and for each other. And one avenue to counter that rising tide of division is to guarantee that future generations have the opportunity during their high school to embark on, say, like, a 3-month sort of a multi-region exchange program and introducing them to communities and other citizens they'd otherwise not meet as part of their civic education. You know, other policies that we sort of support are a lot of, you know, various democracy reforms, right? Making sure that, you know, people are guaranteed their ability to speak their mind, making sure that we provide safeguards against fascism and expand, you know, the franchise of democracy to everybody. You know, I mentioned earlier that Gen Z and millennials are going to be the power brokers in the next election in 2024, but in every election that comes after that. Right? Our generation holds the power to shape the future. And to do that, we have to participate in the democratic process. And to be the change that we want to see, we have to be the change that we want to see. We have to be the people that are the ones to get involved. We are the generation who will have less than a 50% chance in doing better than our parents. There is no guarantee that we will do better than our parents. And for, say, millennials or people older than that, you know, they had, you know, something 70-80% chance of doing economically better, right? Gen Z is now saddled with student loan debt, skyrocketing, you know, rent and mortgage prices, housing prices, right? And, you know, we face so many things. And a lot of people are really, you know, in angst about that, and really understandable, because there is just so much division in this country. And sitting out of the process, crossing your arms and just throwing everything in the air is not going to help that. At the end of the day, our goal is about bringing people together and really trying to mobilize a new generation of young leaders who can be looked upon to, that we can entrust with the keys to the country in, you know, the next years.
Yeah.
Well, I think you're setting a great example of what it looks like and what it means to be so civically involved. So
yeah. Can William, you tell people quickly, where can everyone get involved with Dream for America? And if they want to start a chapter, maybe at their school.
Yes, absolutely. So I think, you know, the best way everybody who's watching can help out right now is head over to dreamforamerica.org. It's dream4america.org. The reason why we have the number four, no reason. It's just the domain was available.
That's right? A good enough reason.
Good enough reason.
Yeah. And I think the best way to help out, you can, you know, chip in, press that donate button, because, you know, we don't have billionaire special interests on our side. We are a grassroots movement that we are relying on people who are no different than you or I. So every dollar helps and every dollar counts, because every dollar is going to be spent on investing in our chapters, investing in our community of creators, and really we're actually focusing on hosting a really big conference as a counter to America Fest. We're calling it Democracy Fest. We're either looking at some time, you know, the next year or two. And so if you can, if you're able, please make a donation. Every dollar counts. And if you'd rather, you know, get on the ground and do the grunt work, which we'd love for you to help us out on, press that get involved button. That is where you can sign up to join a chapter, to volunteer, or to do any really other number of things, because, you know, we want to make it a place where we don't discriminate, right? We will find a place for everyone in our organization, no matter your experience or your race or your gender or whatever it might be.
I love that.
That's great. That's
Thank
great.
Thank you so much for joining us and for everything and for the work you're doing, but also just for elaborating on it here with us. And yeah. I think that people of all backgrounds, beliefs, everything should definitely check out Dream for America and what you're doing.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
All right.
Thanks, William.
Good luck, William.